Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
They said it couldn't be done, but I dude it. We dude it. It's Monday, the 15th of April, 2013. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Broadcasting, yes, live from the hills and hollers of almost level West Pycod, Virginia. Headonradionetwork.com is our home. The third switch has been thrown. And everything should be rolling. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported, in fact. The easiest way to support the program is either by carbon-intensive traditional mail, which goes out to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801, making checks and money orders payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, even better. And then by PayPal, of course, and the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The Horn is available, of course, at our website, headonradionetwork.com. I keep saying it over and over again. Someday we'll build some traffic to the website. It's also available on a wide variety of streaming platforms. Things like TuneIn Radio, which has an app for iPhones and Android devices, smartphones generally, as well as Stitcher Internet Radio. You can go to places like dar.fm and streama.com. If you have a Roku device, you will find The Horn listed there as well. Thank you very much. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Randy, for letting me know that things are rolling in loud and clear. So that much is good. I am simply tickled to be live from the studio here today. When last we spoke, I was telling you a few of the ongoing technical disasters that were taking place here. It's taken the better part of 2 days to get them sorted out, and we are well, I told Agnes a few minutes ago, this feels a little bit like Apollo 13 without the vacuum of space outside. I am flanked by two laptop computers, filling in for two of the computers that are down. I got the production machine back up and running. The other streaming machine, both of those have died in the land, and I got no clue. And we're going to sort out what's going on. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff being held together with the baling wire and chewing gum wrapper and paper clips bent out of shape, it feels like. But we're here, and we'll be here, yay. For the remainder of the week, home for a week, then back to D.C. Big doings in D.C. next week. A staff brief for members of the House of Representatives, among other things, is planned. More work on the 8 campaign. God, I think no less than we've got some days that have 4 and 5 meetings in them. So that's what the week is looking like. And hopefully we'll have some of the technical devilment sorted out by then as well. Many thanks for the good wishes and kind thoughts during the weekend, and thanks for the very concrete help getting operating systems issues sorted out. I'll be loading. Oh, we'll be saying goodbye to Windows 8 very, very soon, as the program is over. Thank you very much, Tim. And thanks, of course, thanks to our good friend Chris in British Columbia, who is also making some of that possible as well. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going, sincerely. We have a lot to talk about, and you know what's going to have to dominate at least the front end of the conversation. But it's also Moran Monday on the horn. But I guess Moran seems a bit too... Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I forgot that part. Moran seems a bit too weak to describe someone who would, or a group of people, it would appear, who would plant bombs all over an area where innocent people are congregating for a social/athletic event. The last report I saw before coming, before hotting up the mic, was that 2 were dead and 29 are injured from the blasts in Boston. 2 bombs went off, a third possibly at the JFK Library. And the last story I said that said that police were dealing with others that had been found. It would appear that these were what, if this was taking place in Iraq or Afghanistan, we would call improvised explosive devices. And, of course, in the wake of something like a bombing like what has taken place in Boston, speculation runs wild, and it can even become rather dangerous for folks who don't look the right way. Because you know that's the assumption that's going to be made. Because an American would never, ever do something like this to his or her own country now, would they? Is this the place where I mention the fact that, well, no. I don't even want to say it. I don't know. I just don't. But it's hard not to note, at least within the news reports as they have been received, it's hard not to note that the bombs went off near where, in a place of honor, families of the victims of Newtown were seated. Dr. John, with a note, just updating me and updating you. Subject line, the New York Post is raising the bar for irresponsible journalism. Are they raising it or lowering it, Dr. John? Semantics. The New York Post is reporting 12 dead and a Saudi national in custody. Dr. John says Al Jazeera has refuted that on air, I'm told, but I can't find if they did actual journalism. Efforting, and a storm of Twitter shaming will follow. See, it's April 15th. And almost all of us know what April 15th means. I guess I should offer a disclaimer at this point. This is the rank speculation portion of the filibobster. It's April 15th, which is not far from April 19th, which is even closer to April 20th, all of which are days that are important to the vicious American white wing. April 15th being tax day. It is also a state holiday in Massachusetts today, which marks the anniversaries of the battles of Lexington and Concord. Right? I mean, you remember the poem. It was the 18th of April and of 75, and hardly a man is still alive who blah, 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 blah. The opening lines of Paul Revere's ride. Well, Paul Revere went a-riding on the 18th of April, one if by land, two if by sea. And the 19th of April saw the battles of Lexington and Concord, which are celebrated today in Massachusetts as a Monday holiday. It's also tax day. And we know how right-wingers hate taxes. And, of course, there's also, being in Boston, the memory of the so-called Tea Party. Right? Are things beginning to gel for you? And then there's Randy Weaver and Ruby Ridge and the Branch Davidians and Waco and Timothy McVeigh and Dylan Klebold and What's-His-Face Harris and Columbine. And April 20th is Hitler's birthday. Now, I hope this is not irresponsible to be pointing this out. Shorty in L.A. pointing out the headline also from the New York Post, 12 dead, at least more 50 injured after terror attack on Boston Marathon, suspect identified and being guarded in hospital. The person, Shorty notes, is Saudi. Meanwhile, headline, Boston Police. No arrests have been made in marathon bombing. That's no as in none, as in zero, as in nil. Yeah. Me? And again, this is the rank speculation portion of the filibuster. Me, I'm kind of inclined to bet on the right wing in this one. We will know whether it is right wing or not based upon how long it takes for someone to call this an act of domestic terrorism. You and I both know, or terrorism at all. If the word terrorism is used, that means that they suspect someone with brown skin and an origin outside the continental United States. Right? If, however, this is a bombing, well, then, we kind of know what happened, don't we? Apparently, President Obama will speak about this, or is already speaking about this. Let's go and look and see. I don't see President Obama anywhere. the FAA has put in place a no-fly zone. Kind of makes sense. The updated list of those killed and maimed is still at 2 dead. Boston Globe reporting more than 100 injured. Area hospitals confirming 69 injured. A Boston.com journalist reports that there was blood everywhere at the bombing scene. Two blasts came about 5 seconds apart. But this is the part. Let's see if we can get this. Well, doggone it. Yeah, I accept. Anything? Anybody? Bueller? All right, somebody tell me, has he already talked and he's done? Well, that's true, Benedict. What could Obama say at this point anyways? I guess we wouldn't. Oh, well. But I think we already know the answer to a few basic questions. And one of them is this. It doesn't matter. What do I mean by that? I mean that just as the massacre at Newtown didn't and has not, and I still predict will not, produce any meaningful so-called reform regarding firearms, even if this is proven to be the work of the right wing or of some sect of fundamentalist Christians or of disgruntled gun owners who wanted to prove that you didn't need no assault rifle to do something like this here, it doesn't matter. Because at this point in time, and I don't see how we get around this, there's no way to refer to our attempt at self-government in the year 2013 as anything but a present failure. Is it a permanent failure? Tough call. Has it always been a failure? Maybe not. But real and meaningful reform has always been very difficult. I think at one point in time we had a conversation where we identified maybe 3 or 4 instances where there were enough people in the Congress at the same time that there was someone in the White House to bring actual meaningful big ticket social change. And curiously enough, it's just about always the same the same folks who keep anything from getting done who have to be out of the way in order for something to be accomplished. Now, what will come out of this is probably a further clampdown on individual liberties, as if there weren't enough already. And what will not happen is there will not be a meaningful inquiry into why these things happen here. If it turns out to have been someone from a foreign country, we will only talk about retribution. If it turns out to have been someone from this country, we will talk about how crazy they were. And we will never look toward actual strings or strands of cause and effect with forming a woven web that led to any given day. 90% of the American people know why Newtown happened, and they want something done about it. And hint, it's not violent video games, and it's not crazy people. It's the fact that in this country it's easier to get a gun than it is to get a fishing license. Certainly easier to get a gun than it is to get a driver's license. But we are a country that does not like difficult questions because we, generally speaking, cannot formulate complex answers. Generally speaking, in this, the 21st century, when my generation was hoping we'd be on the way to Mars, or maybe some of us would be there by now, we instead find ourselves in a feedback loop of shoot 'em all and let God sort 'em out. Dr. John is keeping up with stuff on the in the outside world, and he says, bingo, Al Jazeera English quoting Boston Police Commissioner, no suspect in custody. New York Post headline, unchanged. Right. Yeah. I guess this will have to interrupt some of Radio Rwanda's coverage of that treasonous American Jay-Z who done went to communist Cuba with his wife. And it'll be a nice thing to get a break from that. Why? Well, by the way, has anybody posited North Korea yet? Just asking. This sure would make some really nifty Reichstag Gulf of Tonkin casus belli for that now, wouldn't it? Nah, we'd never do that. We'd never gin up a war on false pretenses, would we? Oh, wait. No, but at least we will get some Jay-Z. Jay-Z will get some relief. And at this point, at least from Radio Rwanda, and at this point, I got to think he's pretty well up for some relief. This happened over the weekend, and it's almost embarrassing to play. But, you know, he released that song about how he went to Canada, you know, get him in trouble, and right? Yeah. So that can't be allowed to pass. And one of those former loyal Bushies who, I don't know how looking in the mirror to put her makeup on in the morning every day isn't just that blood-soaked scene from Carrie. because she's covered up in innocent blood, Iraqi blood, innocent Afghan blood, innocent blood. The former White House spokescreep Dana Perino works for Radio Rwanda now, and she had a response to Jay-Z's trip to Cuba, Huber. It's from a couple of days back.
We're going to wrap this up.
Danny, you did some undercover work.
I was inspired earlier today as I was reading this. And I just, rap is such a complicated form of music.
You're so good at it, though.
Did you hear the white snide there? Rap is such a complicated form of music. That was sarcasm.
I gave it a shot, if you want to take a look. Well, my name's Tiny D, and I'm here to say I bust funky fresh rhymes in a major way. So I'm white like Casper, got a dog named Jasper. If you don't think Beyonce fears me, go ahead and ask her. So if you love Castro, stick with Jay-Z. But if you love your freedom, pick Day P. That's me.
That was very good.
Sweet Jesus. One of these days I'm going to get so disgusted with this, I'm going to go out and just take the chance, jump in the tanning bed, and see if I can just get a little less white. Because they're making it kind of embarrassing. What'd she call herself? Dribbling pee-pee or something? But no, there won't be any more of that fun going on. No. Just as I said the other night. Well, I don't know. You've got a better chance of watching the idiot box than I do. Have all the for-profit media outlets got their animated 3D multicolored 32 million color graphics with the pounding bass subwoofer shaking sound? Right. Have they got that yet? I think it's been. Ongoing breaking coverage. Wonder if the rate card has been adjusted yet. Yeah, I don't know that, buddy. If you want to be on at 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, sure, buy run a schedule. But if you want to be on during the breaking coverage and let everybody know that you're supporting real journalism, well, that's going to cost you. Right. So I guess we wait and see. Anybody taking credit yet? The White House is on lockdown now, and President Obama didn't say terror. Oh, God, here we go again. He didn't call it a terrorist attack. Meanwhile, according to Chicken Noodle News, and Vice President Biden said, "As I'm speaking here, they just turned on the television in my office, and apparently there's been a bombing. I don't know any of the details of what caused it or who did it. I don't think it exists just yet, but our prayers are with those people in Boston who have suffered injuries. I don't know how many of them there are. I'm looking at it on television now." Remember, and the inanity that will follow, and the lack of substance. All of this is the progeny of a little girl down a well in Texas. Meanwhile, down in Texas, Sergi writes in, "Really?" That's the subject line. "Really? At the moment, I'm doing backyard work for a friend with your show on a boombox. I honestly think that woman's rap just caused the entirety of the southern half of Tarrant County to cringe. Lord knows I've cringed every time I've heard it thus far, Sergi, so all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. Dr. John pointing out, should this turn out to be the work of a right-wing group, it'll be pretty hard to backpedal the domestic terrorism aspect. It's literally in the headline of every site I can find. Indeed. But, Dr. John, you know they'll try to find a way, right? So we wait. And we wait. And we hunger for details that will not come. Charlie Pierce is blogging about all this. He lives in Boston, you know. Of course, we have our own Boston correspondent in the chat room, our chat room moderator, Lottie, who, if anything develops, I'm sure will let us know. Yeah. A nice inquiry there, Sparky, chat room moderator Sparky. Wonder when the Senate will let the nomination for head of the ATF go through. We haven't had one since 2006. And then, of course, the earnest pablum that comes from the White House in these sorts of situations. President Obama has said that those behind the Boston bombings will, quote, feel the full weight of justice. I guess that's what presidents have to say, right? Far as I can tell. Not a lot of there, is there? No. All we can really do is send out good thoughts to the people who have had to deal with this. I will, however, I should note, entertain over-unders on how long it takes for either Tom Coburn or Jim Inhofe of Oklahomistan to point out that there weren't any firearms involved with this and background checks would not have prevented it. You think? Or will it be some other wingnut? Will it perhaps be early 2016 presidential contender and libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul, who says that? Yeah, we've got some Paulism happening in the stat. See, there was a whole show pulled together, and then this happens. And we will get to that part, I do believe. But as I have done in the past, rather than sit here and just filibobster, I would far rather, I think, open the phone lines to your thoughts. Because being progressive people, we process information rather than merely taking everything that is offered up. My God, that headline in the New York Post. How many people have gotten that paper by now and think that they're actually being given real journalistic reporting? Oh, there's another one of them Arabs. See, we didn't kill enough of them. Probably need to start another war over there. Sweet Jesus. And oddly enough, there was an op-ed in the New York Times this weekend, and the title of it was actually, I'm not kidding, Bomb North Korea Now Before It's Too Late. Too late. Too late to bomb. When is it too late to bomb somebody? After they've bombed you? The goddess of irony. Ain't no chuckling involved here. I couldn't help thinking of that as I saw this story beginning to unfold. Bomb North Korea now, before it's too late. Well, obviously, somebody or some group of somebodies were out there and they had a similar thought. Bomb Boston now, before it's too late. See, it's that before it's too late part that just sends me screaming into the, oh my God, it's not dark yet, tearing at my hair and rending my clothing before it's too late. Jesus. But I trust you know the phone number, 304-658-3333. And, by the way, I can tell you that the chewing gum wrapper and baling wire MacGyver job that Agnes and I have done in here also means that the Skype line is open. Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype contact. I'm online and visible if you want to use Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. So jump in. Let's get the conversation started. And then we'll, I mean, like I said, I had an actual show all lined out and ready to go. I try to do that every day. No such luck today. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Tracy.
So tell me again, so you're saying that there was an op-ed, Bomb Korea Now?
Bomb North Korea Now.
North Korea Now Before It's Too Late.
Bomb North Korea Now Before It's Too Late.
But see, why? Because the boy is trash talking. He's 30 years old. He's a spoiled brat. So am I wrong in anything that I said so far?
No. Okay. No, he might someday, maybe, sort of, kind of, possibly, get himself a missile that he can put a nuclear-tipped warhead on, and, well, then it'll just be too late because, you know, obviously, then they'll bomb us with one nuclear warhead.
One nuclear warhead.
When the entire world would then turn North Korea into a
pile of rubble.
Glass parking lot.
Right. So you want to start an Armageddon just because the little short Asian guys.
Before it's too late.
With the solid bowl haircut.
And hoop dreams. Don't forget, he's got hoop dreams.
Right.
I'm guessing he's... I don't know. Maybe he's a point guard, possibly a small forward. Really small forward.
Really small forward. What class do you think he's going to fight is, by the way?
Bantamweight?
What? Bantam.
Yeah, because he is. He's kind of a little like Bandy Rooster.
You know, but my point being is, so he's trash talking, you know. I remember a few years back, we had somebody talking trash about, you know, Daddy Bush. And look what happened with that. How did that work out for us, Bob?
See, Yeah, I'm cursed with that memory thing too. I mean, we'd never go to war on false pretenses, like I said, would we?
No, God no, because there was weapons of mass destruction there, and you know.
Yeah, except there weren't.
But there weren't. But you're not. And so here we sit. You know, we're slowly getting out of Iraq. We're getting out of Afghanistan. We just can't leave well enough alone now, can we, Bob? We just got to go. And then, like you said, then we'll have, like you said, we're. See, when you say over and under, because, see, I'm really, I don't understand those terms, like gambling terms and whatnot. So you're asking how long it is before somebody equates this with somebody from Korea doing it, from North Korea, the bombings in Boston?
Over under refers to, for instance, if let's say two football teams are going to have a game, and the right. bet would be whether the bookies establish the over under at 33 points. So you either bet the over or the under.
Okay.
And so to bet the over under on how long it takes some right wing flack for the National Republican Association, the National Bloodshed Association, to say that, well, this didn't have no background checks, wouldn't have stopped this year. You know, I put the over at 18 hours.
At what? I'm sorry, I lost.
18 hours.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. I don't give it that. I'm going to be kind of optimistic and give it 24. But I'd rather say 12. 12 hours, you know. So what time is it now? It's 6:45 in your part of the country?
Yeah, 6:45.
So by you guys, the 11 o'clock news, your time, your will be 8 o'clock here.
Right.
So what's the Fox channel out there for you guys? Fox News.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Dana Perineal can rap about it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It worries me because, like you said, you have these idiots that, you know, like you said, it's harder for me to get a driver's. It took me, you know how long it took me to get my taxi permit, Bob?
Oh, I'm guessing those aren't available in your average L.A. gumball machine, are they?
No, I have to go. Okay, now that I have my permit, I'm okay. But it took a good, because they had to do I had to be fingerprinted. I had to do a background check through the Department of Justice, okay? Now, and even more so, then I had to do another background check, which is a higher background check because I transport children, special needs children. So that's another background check that I had to go. Background check. Five, two. Actually, three, because I'm an access certified driver as well. I had to go through three background checks in order to do my job. And what do? I drive a cab.
Yeah, but if you wanted to drive your cab and carry a gun.
I'm not allowed to carry, as a cab driver, I am not legally able to carry, aside from the felony, you know, all that aside, I am not able as a, now see, if anybody should be allowed to carry a gun, it should be me. What do I do for a living? But I am not legally able to carry a gun in my cab to defend myself.
Right. And there's some common sense behind that.
I don't carry a gun. Bob, you know my temper. Y'all will be reading about me in the news going, oh, damn. Tracy done shot somebody else on the 405.
Got a lead. No jokes. Not going to make any jokes.
But I'm just saying, I know my temper. I wouldn't carry a gun because I have a temper. This is why I know myself. And this is why there will be no guns in my house. Not that I would ever go and shoot. I've never been mad enough to kill. I've thought about it. But the thing is, I had to go through three background checks in order to drive a cab. Three. From various and sundry agencies. From the DOJ to this and this and this and this and this. But I don't have to, you know, and when I get my driver's license here, I have to show that I am a citizen, that I this and this and this. I got to show my Social Security card. They take a thumbprint when I go get my license. And they take your picture. Yeah. So there's a file.
And there's a pretty substantial insurance requirement, too, isn't there?
Yes. And, you know, that's a good point to bring up about having, there has to be a certain, like $1 million policy, a cab, in order to drive a cab in L.A. To be a sealed taxi cab through the Los Angeles Department of Transportation.
Hey, Tracy, I want to share something with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little frustrating. We didn't get to listen to President Not Sure giving his remarks. Don't think we missed much. But there's a poll quote that came out of his remarks a few minutes ago that's kind of a furniture kicker for me. You ready for that? Are you driving?
No, I pulled over.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. Keep it in park.
I'm in park.
On days like this, there are no Republicans or Democrats. We are Americans united in concern for our fellow citizens.
On days like this, there are Republicans.
There are no Republicans or Democrats. We are Americans united in concern for our fellow citizens.
And what Republicans are you talking about that are concerned with our American citizens?
Yeah, see, you went to the first place I went. I mean, what if, see, this goes back, I've taken some heat for this over the years, but I've come to the conclusion that how one votes or how one registers to vote should probably be included in things like criminal profiles. You know, people who are inclined to commit certain crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it, for instance, and again, this is the rank speculation portion of the program. If, considering that this is tax day, if considering that this is the holiday for the battles of Lexington and Concord, if, considering, it turns out that this was some sort of right-wing bunch, is it not viable, is it not appropriate to note that they were right-wingers? Or are we so unable to cope with these things anymore that we just say, oh, sorry, he was crazy?
Because, you know, didn't get them well. If they do, when the smoke clears, and that's probably a horrible use of words, but when everything settles down and they do find out who actually did this, we all know that if he turns out to be Muslim, then he's an Islamic extremist.
If he
turns out to be Korean, then he's from North Korea, blah, blah, blah. If he turns out to be black, he's a Black Panther. Any derogatory racial or negative thing that they could put on that person will be put upon that person. Or he's crazy. Because you know damn well, like the guy that killed those kids at the Bible camp in, where was it, Norway?
Yeah. Anders Breivik.
He was listening to Glenn Beck and all these other people. Yeah. He quoted. Who did he quote? Did he quote Glenn Beck at some point?
I can't remember. Might be.
But I also
remember, what was his name? Mr. Adkins, who shot up the Tennessee Valley Universalist Unitarian Fellowship.
Right.
Went there because he's going to kill him some liberals. And had books by Michael Savage and Falafel Bill O'Reilly and, right.
You know, but see,
But he was crazy, except for the fact that he wasn't. He went to prison. He did not go into a lockdown mental health ward. See how it works?
See, exactly. And so my, like I said, you know, this is those things that kind of makes me a little crazy or crazier than I already am. You say, you know, because like you said, you know, I'm not saying that this person wasn't I keep saying white wing, I mean, right wing extremist.
No, I just say white wing now.
Okay, see, well, you got, there's a couple of us in the, with the right wing, you know, with the, you know, don't forget about our boy, Michael Hill, and I see, it just makes my stomach turn when I say these people's names out loud because they're black, and it just hurts my heart that these people have drank the Kool-Aid and let, you know, people talk them into the crazy. Do you not realize what black folks have gone through and are still going through in this country and the party that you are representing that you are so freaking proud to be a part of because you consider yourself an enlightened Negro? Do you really think these people care about you? Do you really think they give a damn about you being, you know, don't they? You're in this party so they can trot you out in front of the populace and say, see, we're not racist. We got a couple of them. What is it that everybody, what about Negroes? Everybody should own one.
Oh.
What?
No, I mean, I heard that one growing up, but it wasn't funny then, and it's.
And I don't, exactly. Exactly. It wasn't funny then. And it sure as hell ain't funny now. But you, when you listen to what these, you know, like Michael Steele and Ward Connolly, who was, you know, the big person behind Prop 187 out here to get rid of affirmative action at the UC campuses and whatnot and so forth. When you hear these people, these upstanding black folks, and you're like, trying to make me feel bad because I think everybody should be entitled to an education. And however they need to get there, if they need extra money, if they need extra help because of this and that and this and that. Nobody wants, I'm so tired of these nouveau Negroes who by virtue of the fact got their education because of, you know, of any other, you know, name a program and they got in or what have you, but they didn't get it. They got in, but they didn't get to stay there unless they proved themselves. And that's all anybody wants is a goddamn chance. I went to go see 42 yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. And you know me, I'm hypercritical about everything when it comes to movies about black people. And I have to say they did a good job. They only did his first season, you know, when he played in Brooklyn. But they only got a thumbnail of what the man went through. You know, they didn't touch upon, you know, what he did after he left baseball and, you know, so forth and so on. But, you know, it always bothers me. When, you know, black people, we have to be, you know, because I guess Branch Ritchie was saying, you know, you cannot fight back because they won't see you as defending yourself. They'll see you as the angry black man. And see, this is, you know,
Branch Ritchie was brilliant, and it just blew my mind that Harrison Ford played him. I was like, whoa.
Hey,
it looks like he turned in a good performance, but. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the film, but it's hard to screw that story up because it kind of writes itself.
It does.
By the way, just being informed in the chat room, Lottie said, FYI, the 26th mile of the Boston Marathon today was to honor the victims of the Newtown shooting.
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah.
Yeah, I
it's just, yeah. And then, like you said, and then again, they're gonna come up with something, like you said. Well, Steve, you didn't need no background checks to do what they did with this, with the bombs and stuff like that and whatnot, and so forth, therefore, and all that, they're here. I don't get it, Bob. I mean, like, how?
Well, I'm afraid, Tracy, that we're kind of working ourselves up.
I'm working up into myself into a lather.
I am too, and I've been ever since the story broke. I've been sitting there going, "Oh no," because I know what my gut tells me. Because I'm the guy who has been babbling and blathering, or putting forward this notion of a cold civil war in this country.
Right.
And so I found myself saying, please, God, no.
Right. Please, God, no.
But it's Massachusetts. And it's always a neck-and-neck race between Massachusetts and California for which state right-wingers hate most.
The most.
And when you cut, I mean,
they got gay marriage there now, right?
Oh, sure.
So they've won. We've outlawed it out here. So for now, it's going to be Massachusetts.
But
we got a reprieve for now.
But the date and and so I found myself, Tracy, kind of despising myself for the assumptions, and I recognized them for what they were that I was making. But then I kind of walked back the assumptions for a minute, and that's where I came to. That's how I came up with the "it doesn't matter" thesis.
Mm-mm.
And I think this country is at a point where
it doesn't matter.
Nothing's going, at least domestically, nothing's going to make us change our ways.
No.
On any front. We complain about education, but we don't want to do what it takes to make education better. We complain about violence in our society, but we don't want to do what it takes to make the violence less. We complain about, whatever.
Healthcare costs.
Healthcare.
But they,
right.
We don't want to invest in the policies that will make it better. You know, what is the one in the leading causes of bankruptcy in this country?
Medical disaster.
Medical disaster. And like, you know, I go.
At the same time that President Obama has proposed taking a meat axe to Social Security and Medicare, the man sat down and had a coffee klatch with people like Brian Moynihan and Jamie Dimon and some of the other sleaze bags from Wall Street banking houses that created the mess in the first place. And like Sandra mentioned on the show last week, now he wants to sell the Tennessee Valley Authority.
And that just kills me because I was just, you know, I was just in Chattanooga. And you know me and my, you know,
you saw you some Tennessee Valley Authority lakes.
Yes, I did. I was in Chattanooga. I went to Father Big O'Fay, Tennessee Valley Authority. And of course, me and being me, and I educated everybody in the car. I know my brother and sister-in-law, my nieces were like, oh, I wish this bitch would shut up. But I pointed out about the Tennessee Valley Authority. I pointed out how during the New Deal and what it brought to the country, to that part of the country, blah, 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 you know me. And which gave them a whole different perspective on what we were looking at. I said, this was America at its finest.
And it was proposed not by a politician from Alabama, not by a politician from Tennessee or Georgia. Not by a politician. No, 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 no. The Tennessee Valley Authority was proposed by a senator from Nebraska. A progressive Republican senator from Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Because The area that the Tennessee Valley sweeps through, or that the Tennessee River sweeps through, was a yellow fever zone. There was hopeless poverty.
Hopeless.
Yeah. But now, you know, who cares? Let's sell all that to the Southern Company. Right?
Exactly. You know, see, these are those things, you know, back to, I was going to go to, today is Jackie Robinson's Day, at Dodger Stadium. I have my 42 jersey and all that, and I was going to go. And, of course, you know, my girl is freaking out because of what's going on. And now there's a hot, we're going on high alert out here at Dodger Stadium. Because she didn't want to go in the first place, and I told her I was going to go because they're giving away a statue of Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella,
mm-hmm.
right, Roy?
Yeah, Roy.
And Roy Campanella and Jack Newcomb.
Yep.
And I want that I want that statue, and I want it back, so I'd still go buy a ticket, get the trophy, and go home. But now she's all freaked out, so I can't go. But see, here's the thing, and this is one of the things I try to impress upon her. I'm not going to live my life in fear. See, this is what they want, Bob. This is what they want. They want us to be cowering in our boots, afraid to, you know, to go outside.
Yeah, but we got to be careful, Tracy, because it's a short trip from there to they hate us for our freedoms. Please go to Disney World. Yeah, Don. By the way, yeah, Don Newcomb, not Jack, but yeah,
Don. Don Newcomb. Sorry, you know, I know.
But no, I understand what you're saying, and the outcome of this, regardless of who did it, is that there will be some kind of response that will mean that Americans are, and I'm wary of this word, less free.
Exactly.
Ain't gonna have nothing to do with handguns.
No.
But it'll have to do with ordinary people being constantly surveilled.
And not the people who need to be surveilled. Not the banksters, not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an irony photograph not too long back. There's a plaque on a building somewhere in, I think, London, that points out, you know, this is the house where George Orwell lived. And bolted to the wall, right by the plaque, is a surveillance camera. Right? So yeah, something will happen out of this, regardless of who did it, that will be a net negative
for the normal. And with,
yeah.
You know.
And now Will in Chicago tells me WCVB is reporting 2 dead and over 100 wounded.
And what are they saying in Boston? That the people who are actually there?
No. That's right. But no, the CNN reporting 2 killed, at least 110 hurt.
Jeez Louise. But here's the sad thing about the whole thing about what you just said about George Orwell and about Big Brother and whatnot. You know the analogy is going to be lost on what percentage of Americans?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know,
huge.
You know, huge amount of people won't be like, huh? What's so ironic about fire?
And CNN is now leading with federal authorities classify the bombings as a terrorist attack. Then you go then you go one subhead down. Obama doesn't say terror. You reckon the families of those 2 people who are dead are concerned with whether it was a terrorist attack or not?
No, they don't care. They just know that if they're not there watching them run, they kiss their family member goodbye. The only thing they knew that they were going, and it's back to the whole thing about, you know, the Newtown attack. Those people kiss their little boys and girls goodbye. And the worst thing that they thought might have happened to them is that they might have fallen and skinned their knee or chipped a tooth on the playground. They might have to go to the dentist because they broke a tooth. That's probably the worst thing. If they just thought of that, and then you have a, you get a phone call, or and you're on watching the news, and there's an attack, and your children are at that school, and you're my, oh my God, my baby. And here's the sad part. Have they even notified the family members of the people, the two people that were killed?
A couple of internet companies have set up stations where people can help contact and make sure loved ones know that they're okay, that kind of thing. But I'm looking at the CNN website, and I realize we're talking about something that I'm looking at, so that makes things a little bit difficult. But anybody who wants to can go see this. Breaking news, terror attack hits Boston, two killed, at least 110 hurt at marathon, okay? And there's a click-to-play video thing, sure. And then there's a subhead of Boston Marathon Blast, and there's stories down there. And then they've got this subsection called The Latest, all right? And these, and understand, with a news website, these are editorial decisions. This isn't just some intern cutting and pasting stories onto the page, I don't think. These are editorial decisions. So when you get down to The Latest, which is all the other news that isn't the Boston Blast, the first story, Tracy, reads, the first story link headline reads as follows. North Korea, we won't give a warning. Kerry repeats conditions for talks. North Korea, crimes against humanity? Dow falls more than 250 points, or 200 points. Uphill battle for gun compromise. But again, the lead story on The Latest, the rest of the news, North Korea, we won't give a warning. Yeah. So,
I just threw up a little in my mouth. It's hard because you're going, you know, like you said, oh no, we would never start a war based on false information or out and out law. I'm going to say false information.
Sparky in the chat room, law enforcement official says one of the two people killed in Boston explosions was an 8-year-old child.
You
get a little bit here, you get a little bit there. Hey, Tracy, I want to make some space for other people to jump in if they want to.
Please do, because I'm going to listen to the show on Stitcher now, but
I know.
It just. Yeah. Anyway, to you and to the Horn listeners, God bless you so we'll know what's really going on.
Thank you, Tracy. That's awfully kind. You have a good night. Or good afternoon.
My love.
All right.
Your afternoon. Bye.
Bye. Calling from somewhere alongside the freeways of Southern California, L.A., that's our buddy Tracy. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's John in North Carolina.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Listen, I just this is really striking to me, the New York Post coverage of this is like an object lesson in terrible, terrible, unsourced journalism.
This is, from what you sent earlier on and what Shorty followed up with, this isn't journal. This is a guy with a keyboard and a bottle of cheap hooch, isn't it?
I actually just checked. Now, they have taken the suspect off their main page, but it's still in a story. And this is directly in the face of all other reporting, which is attributed to the police chief in Boston, saying, we have no suspect, we have no one in custody, period. And they've got, he's a Saudi national, and he's being guarded in the hospital. And plus they've got, you know, a wildly inflated death count. And I'm
but again,
really kind of baffled by this.
Then again, no source.
Right, right.
I mean, do they say anonymous sources tell us that, or?
Oh, well, I mean, anonymous maybe past their spelling capabilities. It just says a source. it's really that striking. I mean, they are so far out. And I mean, I'm tweeting this just because I'm afraid that no one's going to remember on the very likely chance that they turn out to be wrong. I mean, I guess they could be right, but I find it very hard to believe. But on the off chance that it turns out that they are wrong, nobody seems to be paying attention to the fact that there is a major newspaper with a large web presence that is completely out of step with everybody that's reporting with attributed sources on the record.
This
is Murdoch.
Well, yeah, right. I was going to say, isn't this the same paper that published the editorial cartoon of Obama as an ape?
It was. I thought this was the police that had shot the ape and said something about Michelle Obama.
Yeah,
maybe I'm thinking.
Right. Well, there was an Obama reference. Yeah, that's
right. There was. I just think that the monkey and the gender thing is. You know, we should keep that in mind, unless I'm wrong about this. I mean, that was just particularly sickening on a lot of levels.
Oh, but it is the same paper.
Yeah. I mean, I'm almost certain of that. I mean, someone should correct if we're wrong on that. But yeah, I mean, I think it is. It's. I mean, I listen. You know, my history. I've got a journalism degree from a fairly decent journalism school, and you know, I took classes where we talked about case studies like this, really, really bad reporting, you know, and it's 12 years ago. And I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a case study in that course. If things turn out like I think they're going to turn out, you know, what is going on here?
Well, John, let me ask you this, within that realm of expertise, which you do have. Yours was the first email I saw as I was also seeing this stuff come in, and you were right. I was sitting there just with my little head in my hands going, oh, no. But I don't know. I honest to God don't know how to deal with this because I can't help speculating. I can't help looking at April 15th, April 19th, April 20th. And Lexington and Concord and Tax Day and Columbine and Waco and Ruby Ridge.
And Patriots Day. And wasn't McVeigh really sort of into that?
Oh, yeah.
The party thing. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is just there's so much evidence that I don't think it's wrong to speculate like that, especially if you're not a major forum, you know, where people are getting their news from. I don't think it's wrong to speculate.
And then there's facts, and then there's, you know, just trying to process. Some of this is grief driven, and sure. Frankly, I think people with, and I hesitate to use the word souls, John, but people with high functioning consciences are at this point in time on a sort of grief overload. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that every time and the thing that fuels my nihilism, I guess, is that there's never, never anything concrete to make it not happen again. Now, you and me, if we get on an airplane, by God, we're going to be barefoot at some point. But that's to make us think that someone else is actually doing something, when the root causes of these hatreds are never addressed. You know, Ron Paul got, man, a Ron Paul reference. There's the liquor bottle. Ron Paul got booed by the Republican Party for mentioning that maybe 9/11 had an element of blowback to it.
Yeah.
And Lord knows, I'm sure the right wing's out there screaming, whether it's Michelle Malkin or Drudge or whomever out there, it wasn't us. Or just like Newtown, we can't be politicizing the situation.
And I'm so glad that you said that because that I know the blowback's coming. I haven't actually seen it yet, but I'm certain it's going to come. And the problem with that, and God, we've covered this ground before, but the problem with that is twofold. First of all, this seems to be an act of political violence. I mean, I can't interpret this in any other way, and knowing that there's no one in custody, the motives aren't clear, this has got to be an act of political violence on some level. So it is already politicized. That's baked into the recipe. It's already there, so we have to talk about it. And the second thing, just like with Newtown, this is the one moment where politicizing the underlying causes, once they're known, can have the potential to unify people and stop the next time that it happens. But we are not allowed to do that because it's maddening.
I mean, the sad thing, though, John, is that 90 to 92% of the American people are unified. For instance, in the wake of in the wake of Newtown and Sandy Hook, they're unified.
Yeah.
But we have a broken government. If we were any other nation on earth, say, you know, roughly the size of Texas, the rest of the world and maybe some big English speaking country would be referring to us as a failed state.
Yeah.
Cause we are. If we can't attend to the very basic tenets of cultures that and things that hold cultures together and have for as long as we have been settled down. I'm not talking about electronic stuff or nuclear age stuff. I'm talking about the very basic things about the common good. If we can't agree on that anymore, or if we agree on it and the political leadership says no, then at that point in time, aren't we just waiting for the toaster to pop up because we're done?
Well, we are, and I mean, you know, didn't you listen to President Obama? Is that there are no Republicans and Democrats today in a situation like this?
Yeah, like I said, I kicked furniture.
Yeah, it's completely bogus because, yeah, I mean, on the strange off chance that this happens to be some sort of left wing group behind it, I don't believe that for a second. But for the sake of argument, say that it is. Regardless of what side this is coming from, it is caused directly by the dysfunction and malice and absolute absurdity of the political landscape today. I mean, I firmly believe it's right wing groups. I mean, I can't, you know, get around that. But no matter what side this is coming from, it is caused directly by the hate and bigotry and malice of the system we have today. You know, so this is the only time that's possible where politicizing something like this and talking about root causes and connecting dots like we do has a potential to stop the next time from happening. The fact that this apparently happened, you know, right around the Newtown Monument to me just says that, man, we've failed to politicize that enough to stop this next event from happening. I think these two are completely linked together, personally.
Well, and I've gotten my first offer of a right-wing blatherskate to talk about this.
Right, because there actually are Republicans and Democrats, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A character who can what are the first things that investigators do when an event like this occurs? Are other major cities usually placed on high alert? When would investigators make a determination if this is an act of foreign terrorism?
No.
Does the timing of the explosion, almost 3 hours after the top racers finished, make a difference? Well, does the timing of the and again, this is coming from the right wing. I get a hundred of these things a day, John.
No.
Okay. Does the timing of the explosion make a difference? And this pitch cites, you know, 3 hours after the first runners finished. How about April 15th? How about April 19th? How about Lexington and Concord? How about Ruby Ridge? How about Waco? How about all these things that at this time of year, every year, get the right wing into a white hot lather? It turns out this guy is an author, the author of a book called RICO, how politicians, prosecutors, and the mob destroyed one of the FBI's finest special agents. See, so with a title like that, you know where the guy's coming from, right?
Yeah.
So they're out there.
No, I mean, all this push for, you know, international terrorism just implies to me that somebody knows where this investigation is going to go, and it's going to go back to right-wing extremists, which the FBI has reported is a rising problem, and it was attempted to be suppressed, of course. And I just think that this is something that's going to continue to kill people if it's not addressed. And I don't see why. I mean, that's disingenuous. I do see why, but it's frustrating. Us can't be connected by people in positions to do something about it. It's almost as if this is the goal: division and fractiousness. And I'm sorry, I'm frustrated and really just upset.
No, you're making more sense than me by about a million miles, John.
And, no, I don't think so. I feel like I need to get away, but I really appreciate you being on, because this has been helpful for me, and I'm for lots of other folks.
I hope it is hope. And yeah. And we know about, you know, hoping in one hand. But, see, John, we've already talked about what we know the responses are going to be. I mean, if the FBI catches somebody, or the Boston police, for that matter, I really don't care who, if they catch somebody and he's got a knapsack full of Sean Hannity books, it ain't going to make a difference, because we're still not going to, we're not going to admit that we have a problem. And, well, in any 12-step program, regardless of what the problem is, isn't the first step admitting there is one? And we cannot. Do you remember the hissy fit that the right wing threw when it was right after Obama took office? But the report was the rise of right wing terrorism in the United States.
Yeah.
And they blamed it on Obama, even though the study had been commissioned and done under the Bush administration.
Yeah.
We can't even admit that we have a problem.
And that's the only thing I'm hopeful about, is that the reporting and the phrase act of terror is really everywhere, everything that I'm seeing. So I feel like it's going to be hard to walk back. And I just hope that that's true. I mean, the only thing you can say is maybe this time it will be different, and I'm going to do what I can. I'm sure you will, and other folks will too. But it's just heartbreaking, and it seems so hopeless.
And as loath as I am to say it, John, you're a smart guy. The Horn family is intelligent, and it may seem so hopeless, because where the United States is concerned, it is.
God, well, thank you. And on that note, I'm
sorry.
No, I understand. I can't think of anything to contradict that, except I guess maybe there is hope, even though it doesn't seem like it. But thanks a lot, Bob, and I'm going to get out of your way here.
All right, thank you, John. Thank you for the call, and thank you for the insights.
All right, cheers. Thanks a lot.
Bye now. Dr. John, calling from North Carolina. Will from Chicago is with us on the Skype line.
Hello.
Hey, Will, how are you?
Incredibly saddened. You may think of this as ironic. I am actually applying today for a position in the Concord Public Schools. As some of the people in chat know, as a teacher, I've been having no luck out here in the Chicago area, so I'm checking out east. So I literally must have been by where the explosions occurred when I was out there last March. And I'm afraid to say that we will likely not see any change for now, simply because people are not yet ready to admit that we have problems in our country. We are now in a political state which, to my mind, recalls America circa 1859, 1860, where we have people who are defining the other, whether it's a political party, whether it's a racial, ethnic, religious group or people of a different sexual orientation as the hated other, the source of all the problems. I will not be surprised if the source of this tragedy is domestic. It could be foreign. One of the problems with our foreign policies is we have consistently supported dictator after dictator that we can cut business deals with. But I think our faults primarily lie in ourselves. The only hope that I can give is that no condition, no problem lasts forever. So one day, and I don't know when, perhaps we will have the courage to address these issues. It's just that right now I don't see it because there's such a state of denial. The guy in Knoxville who targeted a Universal Unitarian Church, and that was alluded to earlier several years back, had a manifesto. Was it rambling and hate-filled? Yes. But we have not fully addressed the problems of hate in our country. Recently, I watched MSNBC, and there was someone from the Southern Poverty Law Center on, and S.E. Cupp brought up the whole criticism of right-wing militias. For the love of heaven, Dwight Eisenhower would be the first to disassociate his party from any group that would commit an act of domestic terrorism or even apply it. And until we have people on any political party saying violence is immoral and anti-democratic, we are not going to fully address this.
Remember, shortly before the massacre in Tucson.
Yeah.
A former candidate for the vice presidency of the United States of America put crosshairs on Gabby Giffords.
Exactly.
Physically,
we have
literally. Representatively, graphically. There are more examples than that. You had it for the Senate of the United States from Nevada. Going on and on about if America doesn't change, we'll have to consider our Second Amendment remedies. A sitting member of the House of Representatives told her constituents that she wanted them to lock and load.
Exactly. And this is why the language troubles me. And I will defer kindly to Dr. John, whose expertise in history far exceeds my own. To this, I am reminded of rhetoric before the Civil War. We literally have people who are seeing anyone who disagrees with them as traitors and enemies, and this is not healthy for society. I have hope that this will change, but unfortunately I don't see it now. I don't see, even if the Senate passes any sort of background check on firearms ownership, and ironically, it probably takes you and I more of a background check to get a title for a car than we see very often with firearms. I don't see it passing through the House. Why? Because the House is dominated by people who live in fear and who sell fear in the same way that the drug dealers in parts of Chicago and other major cities sell drugs. That's all they have to offer. And I think people are beginning to get tired of it, but I don't think we're at the point where change will come yet. When? I don't know, but my hope is that my suspicion that nothing lasts forever is going to be one of the things that gets us out of this mess. But this is embarrassing. I mean, literally, when I saw a friend who's in Boston on Facebook, I asked her, are you okay? Is everyone you know okay? This sort of tragedy hits close to home because it could be any city and any place. And I think we have to start first by taking a look at ourselves. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen today, but I think we will get to that point. Heaven help us as to what it might take before we do get to that point. But I mean, literally, I saw some horrific photos, people missing limbs. I read the reports, and I mean, it's only because I steeled myself when I was a reporter by taking human anatomy in college that I could actually look at some of those pictures without getting sick. And I am embarrassed that people who claim to be in the media. I was told to report things carefully. If your mother says she loves you, check it out. That's the adage that I learned. But we have people speculating left and right, which is mostly, I guess, to fill airtime in print space. But good heavens, we have people who are worrying if some of their loved ones are going to make it through the night. And we have people whose profession is protected by the First Amendment acting like the drunk at the end of the bar in Cheers, speculating. What I'd like to see change, I'd like to see some progress. I'm afraid we're not going to see it today, but sooner or later, it can happen. Why? Because in the past, it has happened with other issues. It's just that we're in a tunnel, and we don't know which way to go, but the tunnel does end, and there is a light eventually. Problem is, we have no idea how far we have to walk in the dark.
Well, that's very eloquently said, Will. A couple of things to consider as we talk about all of this. I just got a note from David in South Carolina. Consider some of these things from our history. South Carolina fired on Fort Sumter on April the 12th, 1861.
Yes.
Also on April the 15th, 1861, and perhaps why we have this as our tax day, on April the 15th, 1861, Abraham Lincoln signed into law the Revenue Act, the first ever income tax in United States history.
And the anniversary of his assassination.
This is the anniversary of his death. His assassination took the shooting took place on April the 14th. He died in the 7 o'clock hour of April the 15th.
Right. This to me.
And see, our right wing has a real passion for dates like this.
Exactly. Because
witness Klebold and Harris. Witness Waco. Timothy McVeigh cited Waco and Ruby Ridge. I always cringe about this time of year.
Yes, actually, I'm afraid of April 30th, Hitler's birthday.
That's the 20th.
Death day, right. Right, but as I was going to say, too often, it seems that we are afraid to face the problems in our own society. I guess it's might not just be an American thing. It's probably a human thing based on what I've read of other cultures. But honestly, this event was supposed to be fun. Schools were closed today in Boston for Patriots Day, honoring Lexington and Concord. And people had gathered to watch a race where people could participate and not just be spectators. And someone
but
had.
Remember our right wing, our white wing, Will.
Yes.
Consider themselves the true patriots. They
exactly.
Also, they also, in addition to Sarah Palin and the Crosshairs and Michelle Bachmann's Lock and Load and Second Amendment remedies from Sharon Engel, remember also that these people are terribly fond of quoting Thomas Jefferson saying that the tree of liberty must from time to time be watered with the blood of tyrants and patriots. It is its natural manure.
Yes, unfortunately today, the blood of an 8-year-old child was poured to fuel someone's ideological dreams. And this is as hideous a sacrifice as any of the ancient days and ancient myths. I think what we have here is a pathology, for lack of a better term, a sort of political fanaticism in this country where we have people who see themselves as true patriots, and the true human beings. Having followed the Southern Poverty Law Center for years, I realized that Tracy and I are not considered true human beings by some of the groups out there.
Nope.
What? No, I mean, I am. They probably believe that I have the blood of demons burning through my veins. Funny, I've never had the ability to do even a simple card trick well. But too often, I think we lack the ability to focus on ourselves. So I would hope that from this incident, or as I fear will happen from another down the road, we will take a look at the evil in our midst, because there are some people who are willing to divide America, and the whole point of terrorism of any sort is to spread fear and use that fear to get your way. And the most appropriate response to that is to say no, to open up a dialogue where there are legitimate grievances, try reconciliation. If South Africa can have reconciliation in the wake of its tragedies, perhaps we can address the problems in our own society.
Well, remember, that's truth and reconciliation.
Truth and reconciliation, yes. And the most painful part of that is the truth.
Right, and before you can have the reconciliation, you have to have truth. And the fact of the matter is, this is a country that cannot even agree on what the truth is. If we cite the factual documents, for instance, and I'm not trying to turn this into Civil War Night at the Horn, but if we cite the factual documents from the Confederacy as to their reasons for seceding, they state again and again and again and again and again that they're doing it in order to preserve slavery. Now, you go anywhere in the South and say that to a Southern man who isn't a progressive, and it's fighting war. Well, it was about states' rights and economic freedom. We cannot agree on what truth is. So the odds of reconciliation remain slight at best. And you know, I didn't mean to
slight until we deal with the truth about the problems in our own myth. And they'll take courage that I don't see we have now, courage among individuals, courage among our political leadership, and what we have is a gridlock that would probably have driven Jefferson, Madison, Washington, and Franklin bonkers.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. They designed a government that was designed not to work very efficiently.
True. But when you have 90% of the American populace believing that background checks are a good idea, and children slaughtered in schools, I believe that even as battle-hardened warriors George Washington would say, enough, we have to do something.
Well, sure. He called out the troops on a bunch of people who resisted the whiskey tax.
Exactly. And, I mean, we have to really take a hard look at ourselves. I have hope, but my hope is in the long run, perhaps a few years down the road, we'll actually have the discussions we need to have. But in this current political climate, good heavens, if this turns out to be, as you said, someone with a backpack of Sean Hannity books, the Republican Party will just define him as crazy, but it isn't. When you cast your fellow citizen as lesser than you, and you're referring to Radio Rwanda, to several media outlets, is correct. You have the demonization of people. And once
having mentioned that, let me interrupt for just a minute. Some gun goober, and I don't have the story right at hand, I just read it over the weekend. Some gun goober recently compared the massacre in Rwanda to background checks and a national database of who owns guns. See, then once they got a national database, it's just going to be just like Rwanda, and the government can come and slaughter you in your sleep for having a gun.
There are 200 million guns in this country. There's not enough money in the budget unless we decide to defend our borders with pea shooters to gather those guns. We have a massive amount of illogical thinking and people who are being sold fear and sell fear in return. I mean, good heavens. When a background check is done now, after it's analyzed, it's not stored, it's destroyed. And we have to realize that it is perhaps easier to get a firearm in parts of our country than it is to get a driving license. Now, some will say cars kill people. Guess what? That's not the primary purpose of a car. The primary purpose of a weapon is to shoot something. It might be shooting skeets, but more often it is shooting an animal or a human being. Mind you, human beings are animals biologically, which will shock the anti-Darwinists out there. But the purpose of a weapon is not to drive you somewhere, but to kill something. And if you want to go hunting on your own, or if you want to have something for legitimate self-defense, I can understand this. I can respect this. But good heavens, we have weaponry out there which, if you would have given to one division in the Revolutionary War, the British would have surrendered on day one. Sure. And we have people who act as if the government is the enemy and the only way to change it is by force of arms. No. You change it with a ballot. Why? Because Mr. Militia... We have militia... We have militia who members and others who think that they can withstand the might of the U.S. Army. Hold on. I don't know what that is, Bob.
I don't either, but I've got you loud and clear. But
yeah, I've shut down.
Well, just to I know what it is. I know what it is. Yep, sorry, it auto started.
Yeah.
Okay, it's gone now.
But good heavens, the way.
Well, wait. Wait for a second, please, because I think we've got a question or an answer now to what John was positing a few minutes ago. Because now, is this because John Miller read the New York Post? CBS News, and this is from their reporting, CBS News senior correspondent John Miller reports that a Saudi national is being questioned by authorities. He was seen, quote, acting suspiciously, unquote, running from the explosion, and a civilian chased him down and tackled him. He was turned over to Boston police and is being questioned by FBI. He is being cooperative and denies any involvement. This could mean a lot or this could mean very little, John Miller, CBS News senior correspondent, said. It's too soon to call him a suspect.
Obviously, anyone who saw the explosion...
When a bomb goes off, what do?
You run unless you are a paramedic or a doctor.
You run away from it. And you know what? If you've got dark skin, you might run a little bit faster because you know what country you're in.
Exactly, because we have a demonization of Arabs and Muslims, which to me is embarrassing and recalls the ugly stereotypes that a lot of other groups have gone through and are going through. And, I mean, good heavens, it's too early to speculate on calling anyone a suspect, but darn it, we have what really frightens me more than the lone individual are those persons who seriously think that the way to change our government is through force of arms. And they are too foolish to realize their AR-15 will do nothing against a drone or a helicopter gunship. The way you change democracy is through mass movements.
Well, now, doggone it, Will, we're gonna have that conversation now. You just said democracy.
Well, in theoretically we are a democracy, but we are a dysfunctioning one.
Well, see, I maintain the position that this country has never been a democracy, and that the democracy as an idea or ideal is strictly aspirational for this country. Because I can't
be a republic by structure.
Yeah, well, I can't identify a moment in the history of this country when democracy has ever actually gotten its feet wet. I mean,
we have seen change. We have seen women's rights advance.
Right, they have changed toward democracy, but we still haven't gotten there.
Well, this is in part because there was a great suspicion among many of the founding fathers of our democratic form of government. Ultimately,
well, there's a lot of writing. For instance, if you're listening to Dr. Bill, and he will be back tomorrow, by the way, you're right. There was suspicion of democracy, and there was outright hostility toward it.
Exactly.
One of the things that Dr. Bill has pointed out along the way is that part of the reason that the Articles of Confederation had to go was because democracy was breaking out all over the place.
Exactly.
And from that you get things like, there's nothing in the Federalist Papers advocating democracy.
No, but we do seem to be moving towards democracy slowly, and it's just that I think one of our problems is that as perhaps the first republic of the modern era, we are the ones who had to try things out first, and others have benefited from learning from our mistakes. But I think that we can move forward, but very often the price of progress is painful. And today we are seeing some of that pain, regardless of what the cause of this is.
Well, there's definitely pain, Will. I don't know if there's progress.
We can help, and we can work towards it.
Indeed. Will, have yourself a good evening. I appreciate your thoughts.
All right. Have a great night. And, if you can donate to the Horn, Bob could definitely use the help.
Indeed. Thank you, Will. Thank you very much. Bye now. Will from Chicago calling on the Skype line. And I'm not being cantankerous, and I'm not being contrary for the sake of contrarianism. But I simply don't think that this country has ever had much of an interest in democracy. Democracy doesn't write into its founding document the inclusion of a mathematical formula that reduces entire human beings to 3/5 of 1. And like I said, I walk past the Sewell Belmont House almost every day on the way around the corner to the bakery in Washington, D.C., and there you can find documented the absolute horrors to which women were subjected in this country for merely having the nerve to demand the right to participate by voting in this country. Tucked into the little bank by the wall of the Sewell Belmont House are some concrete steps, and they are all that remains. The story, the plaque outside informs you, they are all that remains of the prison where women were put. Prison. Prison in 1912, 1914, prison where women were put for asserting that they had a stake in this government, a stake that included the right to vote. Going back to the Skype line just in a second here, I wonder if this is going to be part of that case study Dr. John was talking about, because in the CBS News story talking about CBS senior correspondent John Miller says, or reports that, again, nothing about a source, and again, a couple of paragraphs down after the Saudi national crack, a couple of paragraphs down, you get a statement that the Boston police say no one is in custody. Jeebus. Let's go to the Skype line. Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Hey, listen. So, you know, I mean, everyone's going on about the unity, but here's some unity for you. Instead of opening their doors to cold, hungry, and stranded runners and spectators today, the Ritz-Carlton stationed guards outside it.
Nice.
So, I mean, you know,
well,
I mean,
if you're the Ritz, I mean, you don't just want everybody going into the Ritz-Carlton now, do you, Sandra?
I mean, you know, once again,
you might get some of those people.
Well, the sort of, you know, stratification, attacks don't stop that process anymore. I mean, I think that, you know, we are so far removed from 9/11 in almost every aspect because, you know, what the unity is what? Some poor brown person trying to run from it being caught and turned over because it's just assumed that they might be involved? I mean, what the hell? I mean, it's incredible. It's like, well, who wouldn't be running? And, I mean, I just don't,
yeah.
You know, I'm not really feeling,
something,
you know.
Something just blew
sort of
up
unity.
In Boston and you know that you're a Saudi? Defeats don't fail me now.
Well, you're just running to preserve your life, but I mean, it's just kind of, no one's saying there's any arrests happening yet. We're getting the national media pumping, you know, the possibility of, the Muslim connection. And it's just like, you know, everything points, if you have any kind of sense, everything points to some whacked out, you know, sovereign citizen bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I don't, you know, I'm not going to say. Who knows what it is? But I certainly know that if you're Muslim in this country, you're fucking sweating bullets right about now.
I'd go to ground.
And that's the problem with it all. But I just wanted to add that there's been a lot of murdering up in here today. You had 37 people killed across Iraq in bombing. You had 20 people killed in a bombing in Somalia on Sunday. You had, all sorts of 4 people killed in Pakistan, Sunday. You have the ongoing war in Syria with, you know, tens of people being killed. And then you have, you know, this death camp that we got going on in Gitmo. I don't know what else to call it, Bob. I'm like,
well, I think I'm one of the very few people who early on, I don't know if anybody else did. I remember getting into a discussion with Brad Friedman with him disagreeing with me over this. I said that Gitmo is a concentration camp.
Well, I mean, it's a death. It's looking like it's going to be a death camp in a minute there, though, because, I mean, it's a horrible situation that's, I can't even wrap my head around it because those people aren't charged with anything and they've been held for a decade. Some are okay to be released, but they're not being released. And now 110 people who are refusing to take food, so many of them, they don't have enough people to shove tubes down their noses to feed them. It's that out of control. I mean, it just sounds, doesn't it sound like some sort of horror show to you?
Yeah, it is. And, well, and mostly it's one that's out of sight, out of mind.
Well, I don't know. It just kind of erupted, at least the circles I follow. It just sounds really disturbing. And, you know, once again, we got a president who can just, you know, kill whatever, whoever, but they can't figure out a way to close this death camp?
Yeah.
That's the excuse you have to hear about it. But all of a sudden, well, but wait a minute, you got the power to execute people. Yet your hands are tied to close this, it's just a bunch of BS. I'm not saying this is related to the Boston thing, but it's kind of like my point being that, I don't want to have to go war Churchill, but I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised that this
chicken's coming home to roost. You mean?
Well, this blowing up shit ain't been happening more with more frequency. So I'm sorry to say it. I was taken aback when I saw it, but then I thought, you know, I hope this is, I don't know if this, you know, I'm thinking maybe a lot of other people are thinking, was this just the beginning or what's happening?
Well, has anybody started the countdown clock, Sandra, on how long it's going to take to get Dick Cheney on a news program to, well, this is because Barack Obama is soft on terrorism.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm inclined just because, you know, this sort of stuff ties into blowback if it's, an international thing and it's, you know, neo-Confederate pre-new Civil War if it's domestic. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, we know what kind of dynamics are going on in this country right now, and it ain't nothing nice.
No, it's, and,
there is no unity because you have domestic people with their grievances that are willing to go that extra fly a plane in a building mile, you know?
And see, this being tax day, it's hard for me to forget that, what was it, how many years ago was it that right winger flew an airplane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas?
Yeah, that was in 2010 or something.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, we don't know, and it's like all it is speculation. But all I know is those explosions looked to be some serious shit. And I'm really horrified to say, but there's all these injuries are pointing – all these kids, Bob, with these horrible extremity injuries. You know, children, 8, I saw 12. You know, they're just giving a quick description of some of the injuries and –
Well, how can you look at the fact?
How
can you look at the fact that the last mile was dedicated to the Newtown victims,
right,
and that there were people in attendance from Newtown, and that's where the damn bombs went off, and not think that they were targeted?
No, I don't even know what to. I mean, the little one of the victims, casualty was an 8-year-old, so I'm assuming that was related to what you're talking about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And the other, some of the other victims are all so young, you know, school kids. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it's awful. I don't, you know, but, yeah, I just, you know, was it, who are they going to start bombing, you know? That's always my next question.
Well, and I'm not in the cut Barack Obama a bunch of slack, department these days. But I'll say this much. We remember that on September the 11th, 2001, George W. Bush hauled Richard Clark into his office and said, go and find me the connection to Saddam. Okay? At least I'm hoping that that Barack Obama has not hauled in somebody, you know, a John Brennan or something, and said, I need to see the connection to North Korea.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what's going on with their various briefings, you know, who knows, but it's also fluid and, you know, terrifying because, much like when things happen to white people, you know, they just go buck crazy. It's the same thing with the U.S.
Yeah.
When things happen to the U.S., you know, it's
yeah, it matters. Now it matters.
It's out of proportion, you know, and so.
Well,
you know,
did you catch Michelle Obama's remarks in Chicago?
What about today?
No. About the gun violence there. She said,
I didn't.
You know, she said, this isn't some war torn country. This isn't some foreign country. This is the place we call home.
Mm.
Talking about children being massacred in Chicago. And while I understand the thrust of what she was saying there, Sandra, there's an aspect, well, you know, it kind of reminded me of when Rahm Emanuel's dad said to somebody, it's not like he's some Arab washing the floors of the White House. That there's, and what I mean by that is that there's a certain dismissiveness of, well, you know, bombs go off in the rest of the world.
Yeah,
this
well,
is America.
Bombs are going off here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, yeah, I don't, that's about all I have to say about that. I don't, you know, like I, you know, I'm just speculating like we all are. So I suppose we'll find out, or maybe we won't. There's that element too. I don't, if they're already thrusting out, you know, Muslims for public consumption, you know, what am I supposed to think?
Well, and it, what's, well, you think it's Captain Reynaud looking at his functionary in Casablanca and saying, round up the usual suspects.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, yeah, you said it exactly right, which is the first thought And, you know, the second thought is it not being somebody of color. Sorry. Self-interest speaking there, but it's like.
No, well, no. Remember me, the guy that, you know, I'm so pale I burn under the refrigerator light bulb? The first thing I thought, I didn't think North Korea. I didn't think Iran. I didn't think Al-Qaeda. I thought white folks. I mean, I just did, because we are awash in a swill sea of right wing eliminationism, right wing secessionism. You know, Jesus, they're talking. And David from South Carolina pointed out to me a couple of minutes ago that the goober who compared background checks to the Rwanda massacre was, of course, from South Carolina. So.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh. It's just, you know, it's mind boggling. I guess we just have to, I don't know. I feel sick about, you know, these little ones. It's just like, oh my God, you know, it's just too much. But,
well, yeah. And it struck home for me, Sandra. Because, you know, we got to see the grandbabies yesterday, and we took them to a playground, and they were playing and running and carrying on. There's all kinds of little children running and playing, carrying on their little puppy to pet. And it was just, when we went to bed last night, Agnes looked at me and said, thank you, dear, for one of the most wonderful days we've had in years. And there was nothing to it. It was a trip to a playground with the grandchildren.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't quite know how to put this. A trip to the playground with the grandchildren is no longer, in 21st century America, a prosaic event. It's a Prozac event. Does that make sense?
Anyway, I don't know. So I'll let you go, because I don't really have anything else to say except for the, how's that gold doing for you? That shit slid another 100 and something today, and the markets got slaughtered. And I don't know what's going on.
I can hear the ads coming out now. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is falling like a paralyzed falcon. Get it now before it goes up. Call Buy Gold Now. It goes down, they advertise. It goes up, they advertise. Yeah, it's advertising.
Goldman Sachs, they're buying it all the way down. Yep.
Oh, sure. Well, and the head guy from Goldman Sachs is having, you know, beans and Kool-Aid with President Obama while Granny's sitting out there shaking in her boots as to whether or not she's going to. Well,
oh yeah, but you know, speaking of that, that's looking like the last disaster, isn't it?
Oh Jesus!
I don't mean to laugh, but it is not. I just think that was a really bad stumble on his part, because it really ain't going nowhere. I don't think, except, I just think it's going to hurt Democrats either way now, and it was a big mistake on his part, but. It's not looking that great.
Hey, if you got to run for re-election as a Democrat in 2014, I don't want to read the text of the thank you note that you're inclined to send to Barack Obama.
Oh, no. And also, if this shit continues on when you have the town hall meetings for the summer, wow, watch out.
Yeah, that's going to get a lot of and by the way, just a quick update. David in South Carolina now telling me that the word lone wolf is being bandied about now.
Is that right?
Yeah. So see how that works, Sandra? Yeah. He wasn't, whoever it was not part of an organized structure. He was a lone wolf. And that way you get those 6 degrees of separation between, say, if it turns out to be a white American male.
Right.
You get your 6 degrees of separation between Alex Jones, Glenn Beck, and Sean Hannity and him. Even if he's got a backpack full of them.
Oh, no. Well, I guess we shall see. Anyway, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you too, Sandra. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Sandra calling from California. The market went to pieces. Gold is falling like a paralyzed falcon. But, hey, everything's okay, right? Lone wolf. Let's keep it going. It's about 5 minutes past the hour, about 50 minutes of conversation remaining in the evening. Lines open if you want to get involved. Email in from Philip. He says, as a native Bostonian and a federal employee, I believe we will learn nothing from this tragedy. A Haitian lawyer being beaten with an American flag by white youth opposing busing in Boston did not stop racism. A Cape Verdean friend's spouse got off at the wrong train station in the wrong neighborhood in Boston and was chased to his death after that photo appeared nationwide. I worked in Oklahoma City for a brief period prior to the bombing there. The death of federal employees, people seeking government services, and children there has not stopped more militias from forming. Editorial comment moment, Philip. No, it doesn't stop them from forming because they think those are moments of success. Until we understand that there is a significant element inside this country and that it is comprised of more mainstream elements than we are willing to admit, you know, like fundamentalist Christians, we're not going to understand that what they're after is the dissolution of the United States, the end of the experiment. Fini, dash 30 dash, you know? Sorry, not yelling. So, back to what Philip said. The death of federal employees, people seeking government services, and children there has not stopped more militias from forming, citizens from arming themselves in paranoid anticipation of government oppression, or quelled in any way rhetoric denouncing the government or its employees for merely trying to carry out the tasks required to serve the U.S. public. The assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Medgar Evers, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, and Dr. Martin Luther King produced no lasting gun laws. Frankly, I'm weary of hearing people speculate that this or that horrific episode may be the critical point to bring about change. Well, at least I can say that I don't think you're going to hear me doing that, Philip. This country has been violent domestically and abroad throughout my life, says Philip. So I mourn the deaths and injuries in my home city. The permanent bloody stain on a special day and event for those of us living in and from Massachusetts. But sad to say, I'm no longer in any mood for speculation and hold no optimism for change. If anything, today's events will be distorted to argue that guns don't kill people any more than bombs do. Yeah, I suspect that the bombings have been perpetrated by domestic terrorists, but does it really matter? To me, we learned from September 11th that we as a people will willfully sacrifice our civil rights and freedoms, subscribe to ludicrous theories to justify foreign intervention, and destroy our economy for bizarre ideological reasons rather than confront the root causes of our bingo. Prior to today, the rhetoric for armed action against North Korea was escalating. Today will only give many new causes for fear and suspicion of the other here or abroad. Jim writing in and noting, now is truly the spring of our discontent. Yes, Jim, yes. And we are reminded once again, we are reminded that April is the cruelest month. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Listen, when someone dies, whether it's... we have no idea how bad it is unless it's directly affected your...
Who have I got? Just let me know real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Jeff. We're now out of Florida, and we're in Albany.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jeff.
I'm sorry. If it was, you know... we can't imagine how any of these people are feeling. If it was your grandchild, the kid, like my granddaughter's going to have my kid, I'm playing. But anyway, if it's you, your wife, or your grandkids, or, you know, someone close to you, you have no idea how you feel. We can have some empathy with people. You have no idea. I mean, the news media you can't explain the empathy, but I want to push this back because I'm tired of listening to the problems, and I really want to talk about. Oh, congratulations coming back on the air, and I want to, you know, I'm glad you're back on the air, by the way. And Bill O'Brien did that skit about the this whole thing with the Constitution and with Locke and with Jefferson, and it's one of the best things, in my opinion, that I've heard on the radio, including all of NPR, in years. So I just want to make sure people don't forget his work he did and try to keep pumping that. The root cause of the problems on this whole thing, I personally believe, is from the very beginning in time, before Christ, the kings let you on their land, they had armies, and they said, I want X amount of that bushels of corn for you to stay there. They were the ones who chose how much you are worth in bushels of corn. It was totally subjective. And if you had a lousy king, you were, had some big problems. If you had a king who was, you know, easy on you, then you had, you can stay on that property and live a moderately comfortable life. So the economic system from before the history of mankind has been subjective, and it always has been subjective. The monetary system, however, be it gold or silver or feathers or, you know, rocks, is very precise. If I owe you two rocks and I give you one, I owe you one rock, or feathers or gold. It doesn't really matter what it is, but we're trying to put an objective system on a subjective economic system. So you follow what I'm saying?
I do.
So the economic system...
But while I think that argument may be cogently made, Jeff, I think by the same token, we have to narrow the focus a little bit, simply because whoever did this, the perp, is not going to cite something that academic.
I'm saying the hurt is the cause. The hurt is what's happening now, but the root cause of the problem, the root causes of this problem is just, we have to fix the root causes to stop this from continuing to happen. And for our argument's sake, I have a granddaughter, and I have a couple of grandkids, not a lot, but a couple. And they're great kids, and they're reasonably bright kids, and I hopefully they'll have be able to be educated for zero cost, but, you know, I'm going to do the best I can to educate them within my realm. But no human being ever is worth a million times my grandchild or you or me. They may be worth a little more if they have a little more education because they put time into it, and they may be more ambitious. But only in this economic system is where a Romney is worth a million or a billion times more than another human being, and it can't possibly be because our grandchildren, their intellect is their gold and their labor is their silver, and they have a certain finite time on this planet. So that's the rarity of their of the ingenious of the education system. And that's what Locke and the rest of the Constitution was afraid of putting forth. We need to change the economic system on how it is, on how we see it. And that's the root cause of the problem. It's been the problem since before, as far as I can see, before Christ. You see where I'm going with this? I'm not trying to.
I see where you're going. I guess my only. I guess it's not an objection, it's merely an observation, is that if a culture loses interest in protecting its most fragile and most innocent, then trying to redefine
we have no choice but to redefine the economic system. And once we can redefine that as a worldwide culture, just as is, you can tell me it's 15 minutes to the hour, or it's a quarter, which hour, it doesn't matter what hour it is. We all know it doesn't matter where you are in the world. It's 15 minutes to the hour, a quarter of the hour. We all agree to that number. And once we agree to that number, it becomes... becomes very coherent what a human being is worth and how much, and there is some subjective cost to that, but you have to put that to that system so my grandchild they can have their education and their food, which is clean calories and clean water and clean air and shelter. That is, in my opinion, a humanitarian right worldwide. And once we've done that, we stop, not altogether, we stop wars. Of course, there'll be crazy people out there who believe that, you know, the devil's coming or the ISIS is coming or whatever's coming. But very few of those, if they have a good quality of life, because now they have a quality of life that's worthwhile living. And if there's some crazy next door to me who I know is going to drop a bomb on them, they're going to get a drone on them, I hate to show my age, but I'm going to drop a dime on them to make sure that doesn't happen because I'm living a good life. So all I'm saying to you is we need to go to the root cause. Believe me, I agree with almost everything you're saying. And the right bad mouth, and the left bad mouth, the right, and no one's coming together for a solution. And the solution is a humanitarian solution, not a Republican or a Democrat solution, because they're the same. It's a shell game. It's a shell game since Reagan was in office when he changed the tax structure. The tax structure in this country worked before Reagan, but there was no reason to keep that tax structure in place.
Well, you remind me of something that Dr. Bill was talking about a week or so ago when he was talking about the rise of labor in this country. And the difference, for instance, between the AF of L and the Knights of Labor and the Wobblies. The Knights of Labor and the Wobblies wanted to completely upset the apple cart and do away with the capitalist system altogether. On the other hand, Samuel Gompers of the AF of L merely said, we want to have a participating share in this system. And the capitalists looked at each other and said, those guys we can deal with because we can screw them later.
This other bunch, we'll
just suppress the hell out of them because they're not on the same. They don't want to be in the club. They don't want there to be a club.
I'm agreeing with you, but what I'm saying to you is the reason why they were able to screw us to the wall. And the Occupy group's a great group, but they're saying it's unfair. But in this particular system, in the free market system, there's no way of measuring what's unfair. But if you had a measurement, they could say, I'm entitled to this for my 20 hours of labor. Not money, not dollars and cents in any currency.
No, I understand what you're getting at, but I think my philosophical difference with you lies in the where does it come from part of the equation. If I understand you correctly, you're suggesting that such change can be brought about as an act of collective will. Whereas,
No, I'm not suggesting that.
Let me finish.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Whereas what I'm suggesting is that we are presently seeing the beginnings of the collapse of capitalism as we understand it. I'm sure that people said that in 1917 as well.
But there's a whole lot of difference
between the amount of resources available in 2013 versus the resources available in 1917. And the vastly increased human population, the vast decrease in commons, and the absolute near exhaustion of natural resources.
I'm sorry, I disagree with that.
Makes it more likely that collapse is coming. And my argument is that only after it has collapsed can something replace it.
The trouble is, if you don't have that measurement in place, what's going to replace it is going to be a shell game. And there are a tremendous amount of natural resources around. If they're disappearing, I grant you, because of population growth. But that education process, the primary process, will discuss population growth. It will discuss, when you talk about clean air and clean water for food, that's got to be discussed. But you have to educate people to get there. So education is the primary goal. But there are plenty of natural... When I was younger, I worked a 40-hour work week. I was a union worker. I had an hour off of lunch paid if I worked after 10 o'clock in the morning. That means I worked a 35-hour work week. I had a half hour to wash up my hands on both ends of the shift and change my clothes. That means I worked a 30-hour work week. I was able to support a family of four and put them through school. If I wanted a little overtime, I bought a new car. That was the way it was. And I had a mimeograph machine to get information out. We had nowhere near the technology is today. And we figured by the year 2000, union worker or not, the average person will work 20 to 30 hours a week because of natural resources. What the hell went wrong? Two things happened. Energy prices, which is your multiplier for your labor, went up sky high. And it didn't have to, by the way. And they changed the tax structure when Reagan got into office. Reagan said one thing that was right. It trickles down. But it doesn't trickle down once you change the tax structure to 33.3% flat tax. That's what happened. But now we have to say the reason why they were able to change that tax structure is there was no measurement. Once we put a measurement into place, I don't care what the measurement is, it's got to be, it has to help humanity across the board. And once you help humanity across the board, you help stop wars. You drop population if you educate people properly. You have a quality of life that's only 20 hours a week. What a novelty to be able to see your kids and your grandchildren and maybe your grandmother before she drops dead. My God, man, what the hell are we doing wrong? We're too busy fighting with one another to try to find the problem of the root cause. You see where I'm going?
I do. And I don't think you
anyway,
and I don't think you and I are that far apart.
Well, no, we're right on. The other thing is, I'm telling you, the root cause and that measurement is critical to get to where we want to be. And there's another group out there called the Resource-Based Economy. I think the guy's 96 years old. I met with him 2 years ago. I met with him again this year. He talks about a resource-based economy with no money. Money gets in the way. I mean, you have to raise money to keep your show alive. Everyone's got to live. But if we had a basic 20-hour work week, man, and you're going to get paid because you're putting in, you're doing a service. You're doing a service better than the people who are spoon-feeding us crap. You're at least saying, here's facts, man. The NPR gets $1 million a day or more, and they're spoon-feeding us with this crap.
You know, it kind of blew my mind. I was outright. I had to leave the I had to run downtown for batteries right as the story was breaking about what happened in Boston today. And so I turned on NPR because they're the only people that do radio news anymore that isn't, you know, two and a half
right,
minutes.
I got you covered, yeah.
And so I turned on NPR, and they're sitting, they're just doing their usual thing. They didn't even break into the funeral home music to report what had happened. Because, well, you know, 4 o'clock's coming. We'll do it at the top of the hour. You know, no need to do a breaking news thing. And maybe they did break in somewhere else. But here in Almost Level, we continued to talk about the macrame or
Jesus. I agree with you. I mean, we're right there. All I'm saying is we need to figure out, we know to look head on to the right, I give you a plug, head on, to the right cause, to the root cause. And then if in fact that it is that measurement, which I think it is, and we found it by mistake, but if it is a measurement that we require somewhere, a human measurement that shows your grandchild and my grandchild is worth as much or maybe a little more, a little less, depending upon the education of the person who spent the years educating themselves and their ambition. But no human being should be worth the way it's going. And you change that system, a worldwide thing, everybody around the world has a quality of life that's worth living, and we fix the problem. But we need to get something, not to the monetary system. That's irrelevant. That's a bullshit follow the, you know, chase your tail deal. But if you look at the economic structure from the beginning of mankind, it's been skewed, and it's never should be skewed. We now have the ability to look at it and fix it.
You know what? You remind me of something, Jeff. I think at some point in time it might be very beneficial to have Dr. John on because he and I have had some conversations, and he sent some emails in the past. To have him talk authoritatively about the very thing you just brought up, and that is the exploitative nature of economies that have evolved since human beings quit being hunter-gatherers and started doing sedentary, you know, agricultural economies, things like that. Jeff, it's been great. I'm going to try to get in some more phone calls. And
hey, thank you. Have a good one.
Oh, I appreciate it. You too. Bye now.
Okay.
And that is Jeff, and we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Preston, I had a feeling that was you.
You saw the note I dropped over Facebook.
I did indeed.
Excellent. And once again, I'm glad it's there with all of its flaws and limitations. It's a useful communication device for me in many ways. And, yeah, posted some links to your show, and actually I wanted to get back with you regarding, well, first, what your previous caller was saying. I'm sorry, what was his name?
That was Jeff.
Jeff. Appreciated his points about the inequality and just the incredible economic injustice going on, and apparently Bill Moyers had a recent piece on inequality. I haven't read it yet, but there again, some Facebook friends alerted me to it, and I don't know. Did you catch that by chance?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Okay. Well,
I've been seeing a good bit of. I've seen a couple of really profound visuals on inequality.
Okay.
Especially economic inequality, and they're mind. Just to realize where we're standing right now is mind blowing.
Yep. Yep.
Because it is so utterly profound, and you know that plays into what Sandra was saying. If it happens here, well, you know, it matters. On the other hand, how many bombings and deaths were there in Iraq today? How many in Somalia? How many in Pakistan?
I just read a story that we killed 30 in Afghanistan today. So yeah.
Well, that that kind of puts me in the mind of something that Patty just sent in a few minutes ago. She said, just wanted to remind everybody, blowback. We as a country never seem to get it. WTF over. Will we ever get the blowback theory? Someday we might, and if and when we do, we might be able to get and keep it together then. It would be a good start.
I so agree. I so agree. And thankfully, Chalmers Johnson, who literally wrote the book on blowback, you know, he lives through Facebook and through YouTube and his writings. And, you know, he was trying to talk that sense into us. And, you know, his message is
right. But look at what David from South Carolina pointed out. Look how quickly it's taken for some media outlets. I don't know which ones because he didn't necessarily cite them. To start talking lone wolf.
Yeah.
Because, see, if and whether it's lone wolf or he was crazy, then that automatically means that we have no interest whatsoever in learning from it. It means that we want to believe that sometimes people just go a little sideways and start planting and start either mowing down children in an elementary school or planting backpack bombs around a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because these things happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's a random world. These things happen. Or maybe it's not a random world, and these are signs that Jesus is coming back soon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that, Preston, is there a human need for something like that? Or would we be more benefited, for instance, to recognize that there are elements in this country which, whether it turns out to be domestic white-wing attack or not, there are white right-wing elements in this country that want to see this country dissolved and or remade along lines that they determine.
Yes, yes, indeed. In fact, you know, I'm kind of intimately involved with that kind of hateful energy directed towards government because I work in the government. I work with the state of Colorado. And a couple of times, we've had to clear our building because people sent us envelopes with white powder in it. Turned out to be baking soda, but still, you know, terrorism isn't just the use of force. It's the threat of the use of force. And
well, terrorism, Preston, by my analysis, isn't necessarily so much the use of force, but the use of fear.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why it's terrorism.
Yep, and right-wingers are doing it all the time. But who knows, you know, there may have been that violent force or it may have been the blowback. We don't know what happened in Boston. I am concerned about some of the theories. Again, we should be having a more thorough discussion of blowback, but we're kind of sometimes being diverted away from that by these kind of inside job theories that keep coming up and that some are insisting upon. And that some are using some very deceptive tactics to try to get pull people into. For instance, there's this photo of a Facebook page, allegedly, that, you know, send out condolences for the Boston bombing. And it alleges that this was crafted 2 days ago and the government was preparing it and all this stuff. The comments beneath, and it's posted by someone who calls himself Libtard. So he's probably coming from a right-wing space, you know, and the way you can put together a Facebook page is very simple. So beware of these tactics is what I'm saying. And I see them constantly in the World Trade Center narratives of inside job stuff. The Alex Jones.
And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Dear Alex, because lo and behold, our buddy the Angry Indian sent me a link, and you'd have to understand, you'd have to be cognizant of the way things are set up here. He just sent me a YouTube link via Skype chat that said, that was fast. Nutcase Alex Jones did not wait long to jump in on this with another half-baked conspiracy theory.
Yep, exactly.
I don't know exactly what it is because I can't see it on the main production computer or run it. But if he's out there hollering, this is the new 1776 or whatever razor blade throated thing he's howling.
Yep.
Well, A, I ain't surprised, and B, if some white person is caught, I certainly hope they'll grab his computer and see how many times he's been to Prison Planet.
Right, right. And, you know, people should be aware that, you know, some of Alex Jones's organizational support comes from the John Birch Society.
Sure does.
Yeah, he promotes their magazine. It's called The New American or something like that. He lauds John Birchers like Phyllis Schlafly. He, you know, just, you know, loves her when she's on the show. Most recently, Alex Jones congratulated the guy involved in the media takedown of Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who dressed up like a
O'Keefe.
Yes.
Well, who didn't dress up like a pimp? That's one of the ongoing frauds out of that whole story,
right,
is the fact that it was he dressed up like a pimp and went in. No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't go and dressed up like anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, also suppressed was the fact that the minute he walked out the door, the Acorn guy was on the phone going, do you have any idea what just – and calling law enforcement.
Yeah, and again, just deception after deception after deception. And so Alex Jones, I think, on his theories, again, it's deception after deception after deception. There'll be a couple issues that he has a progressive stance on. He has to do that. Otherwise, people would see through him too clearly. But he takes a couple issues, like he's against Monsanto. Okay, good.
I remember back during the Bush administration when he would occasionally say things against the Bush administration,
yeah.
And there were progressives all over going, well, he's one of us. Golly, Sergeant Carter.
There you go. So, yeah, a lot of skepticism towards him, if not outright resentment. But real quickly, kind of an ally of his Sometimes they disagree, but they're together on a lot of issues. Webster Tarpley, who's another inside job person, I met him last weekend, and the stuff's even worse, close up and personal. My introduction to him was him dismissing this person, this friend of mine, wrong and rude at the same time, and then dismissing the climate issues. You know, that's another big government hoax. The government's trying to trick you into this, that, the other thing, and they're taking everything over because they're concerned about climate change. You know, this is where the Koch energy comes in, you know.
Sure.
They're big climate change deniers. And, but anyway, I met Tarpley. He gave a talk at this great progressive hangout. And, you know, at first it was he's anti-war and he's against austerity. Okay, nice, nice. And then he starts attacking Amy Goodman, Naomi Wolf, Michael Moore, right down the list.
Yeah, so see, like, that reminds me, I don't know if you read Charlie Pierce or not, but I've been on this Charlie Pierce crusade to get everybody to read Charlie Pierce over at Esquire.com's politics blog. He's as good a progressive opinion guy and as exists in this country today, and a brilliant writer. And he's got what he calls the Paul family rule. It refers to Rand and Ron. And he says, if you listen to them for 5 minutes, they will make absolutely perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the 5 minute and 1 second mark,
right,
they will say something so outlandishly, utterly, incontrovertibly, stupidly ridiculous that you realize that you've been listening to a lunatic the whole time. And see, I think you can apply that same rubric to what you just described. Oh, you're against war. Oh, okay, great. You want to stop climate change? Oh, that's good. That's good. And then 5 minutes and 1 second hit, and then there's that damn Michael Moore. And you go, oh, hell.
Right. And they're just stoking division. It's what COINTELPRO did. You know, try to infiltrate and stoke division, deflection, discredit people. And so I think they're still at it. But I think they're out there, but their power is very fragile. And the flip side of last weekend, I just didn't run into him and, you know, people promoting their stuff. I ran into activists from all over this country. Denver hosted that media reform conference. I mentioned to you last time I called. Like,
yes, yes.
And hopefully in the future you'll be an attendee. But
well, I'd like to be an invitee, frankly.
There you go. I'm going to actually send them the suggestion. They may not have discovered you yet, but they have found and connected with media activists from all over the country. And
well, can I tell you a little secret, Preston?
Sure, man.
And this is not about me. This is about the medium in which I work.
Okay.
And I've experienced this too many times for it to be coincidence. There is within the progressive sphere very little regard and in some cases outright disdain for the radio medium, whether it be over the air or over the interweb tubes.
Yeah.
I go all the way back to I forget what the forum was, but Guy James was with me in Pittsburgh at Netroots Nation several years back. And he was growing more and more frustrated as he listened to someone talking who every statement they made ended with a question mark. You know what I mean? Upspeak.
Yeah.
Very young person, which is okay. Love it. Was young once. Still occasionally feel young. But he was, and so he finally asked the question, Guy did, well, what are you going to do? Do you have any plans to try to break the stranglehold that the right wing has on the radio airwaves? Because Guy was still doing his show then, and, you know, he took pride in what he did, just, you know. And the response he got was, oh, well, you know, like, we don't need radio anymore because, you know, we've got blogs, you know, and, like, Facebook or MySpace, you know. I mean, That's where we're going to bring about the real change. And I'm being an asshole here.
That was a Netroots Nation person, did you say?
It was someone speaking at a panel there.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, guy walked out of the room and we sort of commiserated and he said, they don't get it. And so I honestly think, that somehow or another, the idea of talk radio is a ghetto to progressives. And maybe that's because they understand talk radio, and I even hate the phrase, but they understand conversation-based radio along the right-wing model where we're going to give everybody their marching orders every day. And you know, some people do that.
They do. That is what it's been associated with, for sure. And that's what it's been for.
But I hope
so
to,
long.
You know, I hope to God I'm not doing it. And I hope that eventually there will be a sort of a progressive revolution away from telling people what to do and what to think. You know, when I say it, when I give opinion, it is my opinion only, and I'm not necessarily insisting that everyone share it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say this about the Media Reform Conference. They did include voices from radio.
Beautiful.
Community radio shows. Amy Goodman was there from Democracy Now! And Juan Gonzalez.
Oh, they're magnificent.
Yeah.
The only distinction I would draw there, Preston, if I may, and this is not a criticism, it is merely an observation of format and structure. There are people who deliver the news, and Amy is magnificent at what she does. She is a reporter. She reports the news. I think, and I think does so magnificently, but she's not necessarily inviting dialogue or discussion or process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not a criticism of her. That's not what she's there to be doing.
I agree.
But we need to find a way to be more inclusive, to be more process oriented.
You know, participatory media, you know, just like we need a more, you know, the economy and all that. So, you know, maybe at some point, they also didn't have like a representative from the local, you know, even within the commercial media structure, as ugly and awful as it can be, we do have this AM 760, which is quite good. And again, it's limited and doesn't do everything I'd want it to be doing all the time, but oftentimes it does. And, you know, this local host we have, Gloria Neal, she is just really a privilege to be able to hear her and the dialogue that she's open to. We have a union guy in Fort Collins who calls like every single day, and he's just been doing a fantastic job, himself, just kind of holding up a labor perspective, which is rare. But some of the more, you know, other positive things going on at that Reform Conference. Yes Magazine was there.
Love them.
The Media Education Foundation, which produces many, many documentaries about the media, including one called Consuming Kids, The Commercialization of Childhood.
See, I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's so vital. And again,
well, I'm, and by the way, I'm saving something for tomorrow because I've got a compare and contrast piece here that I was all set to run with this evening for Morin Monday that didn't quite work out because of what broke this afternoon. But you're mentioning the consumption of children. This is going to be, if you've got time, you want to know this story and maybe be involved in the conversation tomorrow night.
Okay, I'll try to check that out. And again, if people are curious about that film, it's Consuming Kids, The Commercialization of Childhood. And I believe someone uploaded a copy of it on YouTube, so you might be able to check it out there. I also want to mention that another group at the conference was called, it's called Films for Action. And they're based out of Lawrence, Kansas. And it's basically encouraging people to do screenings of documentary film. And they've got 25 chapters so far. And so there's a lot of grassroots media work going on. And you know, I try to keep up with it, but at this conference, it was just like, whoa, this is even larger than I thought it was. And, Free Speech TV was there. Apparently they broadcasted a fair amount of it. And the whole thing kicked off with a party that actually a friend of mine organized. And, it was a initial screening of a film called Shadows of Liberty. And he pulled it from a Thomas Paine quote. I forget how it goes, but anyway, it's about the corporate media. And it very much felt like an update on the film Manufacturing Consent. So, but yeah, people might want to keep an eye out for it. The filmmaker was there, and he discussed his film. And then it was just a fantastic weekend. It really was inspiring. One of Michael Copps, actually, of the FCC, the more liberal guy, of the Federal Communications Commission, he was there and gave a really powerful talk about the need for, again, decentralizing the media and, you know, getting a whole range of voices in on the conversation. So, anyway, in the future, Bob, we'll see what we can do, and I'll definitely urge them to include, you know, what you're up to. And well, Rick Smith, what he's up to, actually, there was a panel on labor in the media or not in the media, and a couple of the panelists.
Golly Moses, I mean, he could have delivered a master class.
Definitely, definitely. And a couple of the people, I approached the panel afterwards, and one of the gentlemen was familiar with Rick, is an ally of his. He's an organizer. I think the transportation workers in Philadelphia, and he was talking about their media battles. And so, yeah, you know, it's a great place to network. I met a woman. She's from Charlotte, North Carolina. She's an independent journalist, and she's working on a documentary about coal ash. And I passed along your contact info, so you might hear from a documentary filmmaker here pretty soon. So,
excellent.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I'm sure you've got other callers. And
well, that's one of the lovely things about the conversations that do happen here, Preston, is that it tends to engender further discussion, and I appreciate that. I do very much. And I hope we will talk soon.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do that.
All right. Preston, have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. The Horn's resident optimist, that is Preston. Oh, darn. Preston, if you're still listening, you have a question coming in from Kate. That I didn't see come in before we ended our conversation. She asks, please ask Preston if Rick Barber, the overnight guy on the blowtorch, has another job in Denver. So hopefully Preston will answer that question. By the way, thanks going out to Thomas and to Sal and to Texas Betsy and to Paul in Parts Unknown for going a long way toward helping. I haven't said anything much about fundraising this evening because I don't like to do that on subject matter nights like this. But we're closer to what would have been tonight's fundraising goal of $150 than we would have been without any of them. We're not there, but we are closer. So thank you very kindly indeed. We got about 11 minutes left before the 9 o'clock hour here on the East Coast. Let's get some more calls in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's your Marine Corps buddy, Mark.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
I've been listening to your show, and I miss you when you're not on live, but I like your show so much, Bob, I listen to the classical music.
Bless your heart.
Well, that's the power of Marine Corps brainwashing, but... yeah.
Does that go so far as to include sleeping standing up?
I did that last night, matter of fact.
How did I know?
I'm on the 8-day shift at a nuclear power plant somewhere in the northeastern part of the United States, and I was and my first shift last night was last night. So as I was sleeping today, Bob, I had my my phone near my bed, and I thought, what is that light coming in? Because I've got three garbage bags on my window to keep the light out, which is fine. I mean, it's and it's working. And I thought, let me check the light. Maybe there's some weather brewing up outside. And it was my Huffington Post breaking with this story. And so it was not shortly thereafter your show starts. And, you know, having been G.I. Joe, yeah, you know, I don't have much to work with, but I do have a heart, and I do have a and I actually last week when poor Margaret Thatcher met her demise, though she didn't realize it, but then nor did Reagan when he first was sworn in did he realize anything. But so therefore they get along just fine. But and they had similar hair, just a female version for her. But any case, the song that you played, I found it and actually bought it on iTunes, but it's also free on YouTube. And the comments that Turner talks about in his music, and I liked his voice and his language.
Now you're talking about Thatcher F the kids?
Yes. And I thought,
yeah, we have John Fox to thank for sending that along.
Well, I thank John Fox. I thank Preston for his mentioning of Chalmers Johnson, the World War II naval veteran who goes on to become an educator, who was hired as a CIA Nary Studies expert for them, and also Fisk, the expert for the hired by the CIA to give them information about what's going on in the Middle East. And I actually, I guess about 10 years ago, I was in Massachusetts working somewhere here in the Northeast, and I got a chance to see not only Amy Goodman, but I got to see Howard Zinn at Faneuil Hall.
Wow!
And I proudly wore my Carhartt jacket, which with big bold print on the back and a hand sewn in flag in the back. I wore it to that, and I look in Faneuil Hall, and there's a few busts up there towards the front, and one of them, I thought that was so impressive, and to me, so Boston was none other than Frederick Douglass, all the same dimension and size, you know, no one of any more importance. But as the talk ended, and I went protesting the war and being sympathetic to peace, a young man walked by me, and he said, he looked out at me, and I said, let me get out of your way. And he said, you're a union carpenter. And I said, yes, I am. And he said, my uncle or father-in-law is a union carpenter. And he said that he made some nice comment. And then he said, do you know that out of all the works of life in America that you guys are considered maybe the most sound mentally? I thought, well, we have some real characters amongst us. We all do in all walks of life. But, you know, we are dedicated to a problem solving, and I like it. And also, it's important. Your people skills are important as well. To cooperate information to somebody as you're building something, they may not see what you see, so you have to work with their, you know, abilities. And some people's abilities might exceed yours, so you have to be able to break information down in a different direction. That's true with any walk of life. But getting back, you had an original caller tonight, Bob, who the journalist degreed individual.
Oh, Dr. John?
Well, yeah, I guess that was Dr. John. And he was upset with some aspect of the immediate coverage. Was it about the body?
Well, no, it was about the fact that the New York Post was running around out there saying things that absolutely nobody else was saying.
Well, don't they always?
Well, true. Yeah. And then I sent the link along to Dr. John of the story from CBS News, quoting their veteran correspondent John Hunderford, saying that a Saudi was in jail or in custody or under guard at the hospital or something. But again, repeating that the Boston PD says nobody's in custody. And John responded. He said, I'm perfectly willing to be wrong about my gut feeling on this, but I'll still be surprised if this turns out to be anything. What I'm scared to death of out of that business is that some dark-skinned man was seen running away from the scene, running for his life, because, you know, when bomb one goes off and then bomb two goes off, you got to be wondering when bomb three is going off, and you don't even know which way to run. All you can do as a human being with the fight or flight kicked in and nobody to fight, you do the flight thing. So somebody sees a brown guy running away, tackles him, beats the snot out of him. Hey.
I guess he had burns on his hand, but I would just make a practical observation, and I agree with Sandra's observation. I'm hypervigilant about ignorance when it comes to race. It was, anyway, one of my specialties and continues to be in life. I call myself the white buffalo soldier. I don't need to tell folks that, but a lot of folks I work with, I kind of am aware of that. And I continue to listen to you because you're equally aware and with our history as Americans. I like listening to you because you're very vigilant about that subject. I just would make an observation, though. I would just say that the gentleman running, remember on the 10th day, a dark complected person running there or something that, you know, who knows, but in the end. But I just spoke with a lady a few minutes ago, and the aspiration comes
right here. Hey, Mark, I hate to say it, my friend. But for some reason, you're breaking up something fierce, and I don't think we're necessarily getting your full thought in. If you'd like to throw that into an email, then I will read it at the top of tomorrow's show, or, you know, call back, whatever. That'd be fine.
All right, Bob. Have a good one.
Take care, Mark. Bye now. Our buddy Mark. And we'll try to get one more phone call in, assuming the phone lines cooperate. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Billy.
Hey, Billy. What's happening, man?
Hey, dude. So, actually, I think this is my first time calling in, but...
It is, but you'll survive. You'll be fine.
But I caught something about 12 minutes ago that just hit me, and I got a call in talking about inclusion. And, you know, being a preschool teacher with multiple children with developmental disabilities, it's one of those... If we're going to change this country, we got to get these children exposed starting as early as possible to tolerance, love, and compassion to one another. And, you know, it's just like the earlier you start it, you know, the earlier things get going, you know, it's like, I remember when I was taking my certification course last year, we had a exercise named the 5 traits in your teaching style. And it was like, there were like 30 words on there. One of them was social justice. I put down social justice, and the teacher said, well, I've been teaching this class for 20 years, and you're the first person ever put down the word social justice on the little card. So I know time's about to go, but I just want to get your quick thoughts on that.
Unfortunately, I agree generally, but I can't go much further than that, Billy, because I got to get out of here.
All right, cool.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Billy, and it really is time to get out of here. Hardly any time for credits. Thank you, everyone, for making all this happen. I'm awfully glad we could be together this evening, and we got things put together with baling wire and chewing gum wrappers. And hopefully it'll be even better tomorrow night. It's time for Rick Smith. Thanks, y'all. Have a great evening.